Will the House come to order? Would the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please take the roll?
35 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Representative Clux.
Mr. Speaker, no member is excused from the call today.
Our chaplain today is Father Innocence of the St. Nicholas Russian Orthodox Church. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, Holy Spirit, Christ is risen from the dead, trampling down death by death, and upon those in the tombs bestowing life. This is the day of the resurrection. Let us be illumined, O people. Pascha, the Pascha of the Lord. For from death to life and from earth to heaven has Christ led us. As we sing the song of victory, Christ is risen from the dead. Let us purify our senses, and we shall see Christ shining in the unapproachable light of his resurrection. We shall clearly hear him say, Rejoice. As we sing the song of victory, Christ is risen from the dead. Let the heavens be glad, and let the earth rejoice. Let the whole world, visible and invisible, keep the feast. For Christ is risen, our eternal joy. Christ is risen, indeed he is risen. O Lord, give thy blessing. Amen.
Representative Gall, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the prayer be spread on the journal.
Are there any objections as to having the prayer spread upon the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the journal for the 115th legislative day?
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 115th day in House Supplement Numbers 131 and 132.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the journal for the 115th day in House Supplement 131 and 132 be approved as certified.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journal or the supplement? Hearing no objection, the journal and supplement stand approved. Do we have any guests for introduction today? Representative Gull.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We do have some guests with us today from Hobart Bay. As many of you know, they've started logging operations down there again, and with us we have a group of students and their teachers. The students are Carlin Lundberg, Tom Scott, Harold Meske, Tommy Lynch, John Deerdorf, and Mike Scott, and with them is Mrs. Pamela Scott and Mr. Clifton Wilson. Please help me welcome them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further guests for introduction? Messages from the governor.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate concurred in the House amendment to committee substitute for Senate Bill 45 Judiciary, thus adopting House committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 45 Judiciary, hospital inspections and investigations by the Department of Health and Social Services. The Senate passed and returned committee substitute for House Bill number 227, Finance, an act relating to fish processors and primary fish buyers, effective date, House Bill number 251, extending the termination date of the Board of Veterinary Examiners, and committee substitute for House Bill 534, Judiciary, relating to violent crimes compensation and providing for an effective date. These bills have been sent to enrolling. The Senate passed and transmitted for consideration committee substitute for Senate Bill 295, Hess, by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, an act relating to insurance coverage for the treatment of a mental or nervous condition.
Two standing committees, Labor and Commerce and Health, Education, and Social Services.
Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 334, Resources, by the Resources Committee, an act relating to Hatcher Pass Public Use Area.
One standing committee, Resources.
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 355, Finance, by the Finance Committee. An act relating to a court facility in Fairbanks and providing for an effective date.
Judiciary and Finance.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any further communications that should come before this body?
No, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to reports of standing committees.
The Resources Committee has considered Senate Joint Resolution 48 relating to the continued operation of the Institute of Northern Forestry at Fairbanks and the Forestry Survey Group in Anchorage and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by the co-chairman, Schultz, concurring Schultz, M.W. Miller, Herman Wallace, Jenkins, and Sund. Pierce has no recommendation. Senate Joint Resolution number 48 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Resources Committee has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 50 Resources relating to the incidental catch of high-value fish stocks within the United States exclusive economic zone and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Schultz co-chair, concurring Schultz, Herman, Wallace, M.W. Miller, and Sund. Pearson Jenkins have no recommendation. Senate Joint Resolution number 50 has no further referral. The Resources Committee has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 51 Resources relating to the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, Sections 705 and 706, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Schultz co-chair, concurring Schultz, M.W. Miller, Pierce, and Jenkins. Having no recommendation, Herman, Wallace, and Sund. Senate Joint Resolution number 51 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 69, Judiciary Amended, relating to licensing and regulation of the sale and distribution of alcoholic beverages and recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 69, Judiciary, with the same title, and recommends as follows. Report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman. Signing do pass, M.M. Miller. Signing no recommendation, Sun, Grunberg, and signing do not pass, Taylor and Pettijohn, and Phillips signed do not pass unless amended. Senate Bill 69 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Resources Committee has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 418 Resources, Alaska Minerals Commission, and recommends as follows. The report was signed by Schultz co-chair, signing do pass, Schultz, M.W. Miller, and Jenkins. Having no recommendation, Pierce, Herman, Wallace, and Sund. Senate Bill 418 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Resources Committee has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 467, CNRA, Operation of Campgrounds, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Schultz co-chair, concurring Schultz, Wallace, M.W. Miller, Herman, and Sund. Having no recommendation, Pierce and Jenkins. Senate Bill 467 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered Senate Bill 475 amended, designating the woolly mammoth, Mammothus primigenius, as the state fossil, and recommends as follows. Report was signed by Hurley, Chairman, signing do pass, Cato, and Boucher. Having no recommendation, Jenkins, Navarre, Collins, and Hurley. Senate Bill 475 has a further referral to the Hess Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
The House Special Committee on State Loans has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 405, Finance, Loans under the Alaska Grain Reserve Program, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Sund, Chairman. Signing do pass, Sund and Fuller. Ewing signed, do pass with reservations. Senate Bill 405 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The House Special Committee on State Loans has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 468, Finance Amended, creating the Rail Belt Energy Council, and recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 468, Loans, with the same title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Sun Chairman, concurring Sun, Fuller, Cotton, and Ewing. Senate Bill 468 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The House Special Committee on State Loans has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 477, Finance, a special appropriation to the Alaska Power Authority for reviewing and evaluating rail belt electric power alternatives, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Sun, Chairman, concurring Sun, Fuller, Cotton, and Ewing. Senate Bill 477 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further special committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Steve Nerland by Representative Pinalberry. Citation honoring Kuskokwim Fishermen's Cooperative Incorporated by Representative Binkley and Senator Sackett. I have no further citations for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Those citations will be referred to the Rules Committee for calendaring.
I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the consideration of the daily calendar. Will the clerk please read the first item on that calendar?
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 138, Finance, amended by the Finance Committee, an act relating to pricing and marketing of alcoholic beverages. The State Affairs Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Hurley, Chairman. Concurring, Hurley, Boucher, Cato, Collins, and Jenkins. Navarre has no recommendation. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Finance Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 138, as amended by the Senate, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the motion to advance to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 138, Finance, amended by the Finance Committee, an act relating to pricing and marketing of alcoholic beverages.
The bill is before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, this is a bill which will prohibit happy hours, and I'd like to declare a conflict of interest since...
The chair did not hear any objections. Hearing no objections, are there objections? Okay, there are objections. The representative must vote. Representative Maru.
It's my understanding we're in third reading on this bill?
That is correct. Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The prime sponsor sent around a letter saying that Massachusetts was the first state to adopt anti-happy hour laws. That in itself is enough to make me vote against this bill. Speaking as a person who spent 17 years in Taxachusetts, land of liberals and other strange people, this bill, if it becomes a law, God forbid, will be virtually impossible to enforce. Not only that, but everybody will be out to try to find a way to outsmart it, and they will succeed. This is not going to cut down, in my opinion, alcohol consumption, nor should we be trying to do that for the general populace, those people who abuse alcohol and then hurt other people are the people we should be going after, not every single person who imbibes. If we want to do away with things that hurt people, why don't we outlaw cigarettes and cigars? We shouldn't be trying to do that. We should go after the abusers, the people who hurt other people, not the people who hurt themselves. I will be voting against this, and if I could vote against it more than once, or if I can find a way to vote against it more than once, I will do so. Thank you.
Any further debate? Representative Sun.
Speaker, I have a slight interest in some dispensary and package licenses. I'd like to declare a conflict of interest on this bill and ask not to vote.
Hearing objections. Representative Miller.
Record, I'd like to just say briefly what this bill is all about. The bill is specifically to prohibit practices by bars and that encourage excessive and irresponsible drinking, which absolves anyone in this chamber. Mr. Speaker, it specifically prohibits those practices that encourage patrons to drink a lot of alcohol in a very short amount of time, usually without any food. The bill is endorsed by MAD. It has been reviewed by the CHAR group, and they find no problem with it. Indeed, privately, several bar owners have quietly indicated to proponents of the legislation that they support it, that they believe it will reduce or eliminate a practice that they don't approve of. Mr. Speaker, anytime you've got CHAR and MAD in the same boat and rowing in the same direction, I think we ought to go with it.
Representative Scholl.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't think necessarily that you have CHAR and MAD in the same in agreement on this piece of legislation. It's a terrible piece of legislation. I don't think that CHAR supports it. I think CHAR was given an ultimatum. There was going to be a bill passed this year, and there were three bills pending, and they were given the opportunity to take a look at one. And this one is the one that they chose. So it's kind of like this: either cut off your right leg, you'll list to the right; cut off your left leg, you'll list to the left; or cut off your head. And so I think they chose for one of their legs. So this bill, and I agree with the representative from Homer, if you take a look at it and you try to start enforcing this thing, this bill in no way, shape, or form has or protects the consumers of the state of Alaska that, in fact, do stop by during happy hour and have a beer or a glass of wine or whatever it may be. You are telling these people, if you do, in fact, stop by now and have a glass of beer or whatever, you are going to be paying the prevailing price, whatever that may be, $2, $3, $4, $5, where they may have been able to buy it. So if you want to protect the consumers of the state of Alaska, then I would ask you to vote no on this grim, grim piece of legislation.
Any further debate? Representative Ringstedt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the chairman of the Libertarian Caucus. Does this bill list to the right or list to the left?
Representative Maru.
I'm glad you asked that question. Within the Libertarian Party and in true politics, there is no such thing as right or left. There is only pro-government or pro-liberty. This bill is pro-government and strongly anti-liberty. In fact, it is analogous to HB 224, a mandatory seatbelt bill for adults, which we recently defeated, and rightly so. People who drink to excess are hurting themselves and destroying their brains. Every time you have a drink, if you don't know this, let me advise you, every time you have a drink, you destroy a few brain cells. Of course, there are maybe a few of us who have some brain cells in excess that we can afford to lose. There may be others of us who cannot afford to lose any more brain cells. And in fact, I have greatly reduced my imbibing over the last few years. I had two beers last night, and that's about it for the week, because I don't want to lose any more brain cells. But people who drink to excess are destroying their brains, not my brain. And if they want to drink to excess, that is indeed their business. Now, if they drink and then go outside and get in a car and run over somebody, that's an entirely different matter, and we should get them because they run over somebody, not because they drank to excess. They're not necessarily connected. If they drink and then walk home, you know, they're not hurting anybody, although I have seen in Homer a man who was arrested for drunk walking. Nonetheless, I think that's carrying that a little bit too far, too. I strongly urge that you vote against this bill, and I obviously agree with the last two speakers. Thank you.
Any further debate? Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think mine is more of a comment because I do support the concept of this piece of legislation, but at this time I'm really leaning towards voting against this bill because it seems to me what we're doing is just giving the alcoholic one more opportunity to blame someone else for his own affliction, I guess you could say, that he's having. And are we really answering the problem here, or are we creating a bigger one? And I'd appreciate if anyone could answer that for me.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I truly believe we are answering a problem. There's no question about it. When you give people an economic incentive to drink as much as they can in a short amount of time, that is not good public policy. And although the representative from Homer says if a person who is drunk gets in the car and then runs over somebody, you should arrest him for driving the car and then running over somebody and not for drinking, Mr. Speaker, if we can, as a public policy, determine that it's not good business to entice people to consume as much alcohol as they can in a brief amount of time, usually without food, you know, that's just good public policy. Mr. Speaker, the question has been raised, this is going to be unenforceable. The burden, Mr. Speaker, is on the licensees, on the liquor stores, the cocktail stores. I believe, Mr. Speaker, that 99.9% of the people that operate those stores in the state are more than willing to do so lawfully. Perhaps members of this body think that a huge number of those bars are going to operate in opposition to the law, but I don't share that low opinion they apparently feel for a significant number of the operators of those establishments. Mr. Speaker, we all, in our private conversations, acknowledge that alcoholism is probably the biggest problem that we face in the state of Alaska, health-wise. This is an opportunity for us to do a little bit of something about it. It's totally not going to solve the problem. It's just another step in the right direction, and it will help somewhat. The reason it will help, it will stop encouraging people to consume a whole amount of booze in a real short amount of time, and therefore not only destroy a brain cell or two, but destroy people's abilities to function properly. It's been well established that over a period of time, if people are, pace themselves, or in some cases, if the law has to encourage them to pace themselves, the irresponsibility that results is completely diminished, or not, if, perhaps not completely, but severely diminished. This is good public policy, Mr. Speaker, and it's not going to cause an undue burden on any establishment. I don't think it's going to create an undue burden on any person in the state of Alaska who chooses to drink.
Any further debate? Representative Pinyalberry.
The sale of alcohol, and we know that red meat causes cancer. What is the next step then? Are we going to be passing legislation to restrict the sale of red meat?
Representative Schultz.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. The previous speaker was talking about alcoholism being a big problem in the state of Alaska, and it very definitely is, and so is drug abuse. And we do address those problems. As a matter of fact, we have in our state budget and through federal grants and everything else, we have gone overboard. As a matter of fact, in communities throughout the state of Alaska, we have three or four agencies competing for the same drunks. Now, you get down to a smaller community, and I'm serious. They are competing and trying to help the same, they're working with the same clientele, and you got three or four agencies out there that are working and trying to say that they offer a better program and that therefore this person should be working with them. So you've got competing agencies that we fund in the state of Alaska through our operating budget and through federal grants, etc., that are in fact competing for the same clientele. Okay, but I agree that alcoholism is a very serious problem in the state of Alaska. But I do believe that, in fact, we have gone overboard when it comes to the programs because we have too many of them and we should try to narrow it down to one. This bill, if adopted, when people walk in to have a beer, like I said, a glass of wine or whatever, you're going to walk in, and these people are going to tell these consumers, when they sit down, thanks to the 14th Alaska Legislature, I could charge you a dollar less, but now I can't. You're going to have to pay for it. So I would hope that the businesses in the state would say, and hang up wherever they can, signs that would say, thanks to the 14th Alaska Legislature, you now will pay the prevailing price for beer and other drinks all the time, and we cannot deviate from that.
Representative Miller.
That some of the people who, I guess they won't have the chance to put up the sign I'm proposing. If we pass this bill, perhaps some mother won't hang up a sign that says, thanks to the Alaska Legislature, my son didn't get killed, by a drunk while walking home. Mr. Speaker, this bill is, we kind of have some fun with it and everything else, but it's very simple and it makes sense. All it says is that as an enticement to get people in the door and to get them to drink a whole lot, you can't give away free drinks. You can't deliver deliver a drink to somebody who already has two or more sitting in front of him or her. As soon as they get rid of those, you can, but you can't just load up on a client or a customer. It says you're not going to sell drinks at a reduced rate in order to get people in there to drink more, except at private functions. You can offer a reduced rate according to the legislation. And it also prohibits encouraging or permitting an organized game or contest. This is on the part of the of the store, of the cocktail bar, not on the part of the patrons themselves, from having contests to see who can drink the most. If, Mr. Speaker, this bill, just it's just common sense. I don't even know why we're talking about it so long.
Any further debate? Representative Herman.
Mr. Speaker, just a question possibly to the Judiciary Chairman. If bar owners were to give away free drinks or do these things, what would their penalties be?
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I haven't looked up. They would be in violation of the statutes, so their penalties would be whatever they were for any other violation of the law. There's a whole lot of things bar owners very properly are restricted from doing. And, I mean, in fact, we've got a whole title in our statute books. And if you violate any of those, you're in violation of the law. And ultimately, if it's bad enough and the board decides it's bad enough, they can take the license away, although they don't do that on a frivolous basis.
Any further debate? Representative Schultz, another comment on behalf of the political faction, the Wobblies?
Okay, this is it. I'm not going to comment anymore. Would like to say that I was just wondering to the sponsors of this, can the people now put up signs or anything and say sad hour?
Yeah. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 138, finance amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk please tally the board?
27 yeas, 12 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 138, finance amended, has passed the House. Representative Miller.
For the first time in 16 years, I pushed the wrong button. I would like to... I'd like to give notice of reconsideration of my vote on this bill and move to bring it up at this time.
Getting old. It's time to get out.
I was going to make a comment, but I'll refrain. Okay, we do have a motion here to bring up reconsideration on the same day. Are there any objections? Do I hear an objection? Okay, I heard an objection. Representative Pinelberry?
Mr. Speaker, only for the comment that, as I observe the chairman of the judiciary voting, I think he pushes the wrong button a lot of the time.
Are there any objections to bringing up this bill for reconsideration on the same day? I hear objection. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 138, finance amended, be brought up for reconsideration on the same day? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
36 yeas, 3 nays.
The motion has passed. Would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 138, finance amended by the Finance Committee. An act relating to pricing and marketing of alcoholic beverages.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 138, finance amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
28 yeas, 11 nays.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 138, finance amended, has passed the House on reconsideration. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, there is a letter of intent in the Senate Journal at page 1884. I move and ask unanimous consent the Senate letter of intent be approved.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the Senate letter of intent? Hearing no objections, the Senate letter of intent has been adopted. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 251, Hess, by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee. An act relating to regulation of the practice of psychology and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass and attaches a letter of intent. The report was signed by Navarre Chairman, signing do pass, Navarre, Copen, and Hanley, and Davis. Boucher signed. Hess reviewed suggestions in Alaska Native Health Board letter of 4986, and Collins signed no recommendation, and Davis signed do pass. The Hess Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass and attaches a letter of intent. The report was signed by the co-chairs, Kopanen and Grunberg. Concurring, Grunberg, Kopanen, Thompson, and Hurley. Hanley has no recommendation. I have an amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Would the clerk please...
Oh, it is to the amendment. The amendment is to the letter of intent. I'm sorry. I have no amendments on my desk.
Having no amendments, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate Hess Committee substitute for Senate Bill 251 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the motion to advance to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 251 Hess by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee. An act relating to regulation of the practice of psychology and providing for an effective date.
Third reading, under debate. Representative Cato.
Mr. Speaker, this bill allows a psychological associate, a graduate of master's degree level, to petition for full licensure following completion of 5 years supervised licensed practices. This is also one of the audit's findings and analogous to other states. Currently in Alaska, a psychological associate must practice under the supervision of a licensed psychologist throughout their professional life. This change would allow them to eventually petition for independent status. And if you notice, I said eventually. Thank you. I have a lot more information on if anybody's interested.
Any further debate? Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do have a question on page 3, line 18. There is a addition of a word, or, which the way I read that section, which is section 4, amending section 08-86-150, it used to be that if you were to be licensed in the state to by credentials from another state, you had to meet conditions 1, 2, 3, and 4. Now it appears that through the addition of the word or, you only have to meet any one of those conditions. And I'm curious if that is the effect. And if so, I would have to have someone explain the new Section 2 as to how strict of a qualification is it that a person be a diplomate in good standing of the American Board of Professional Psychology.
Representative Cotton.
I think I read it a little differently, Mr. Speaker. I think it's 1 and 2 or 3.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 251, Hess, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the board? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Collins, the roll is open for your vote. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
38 yeas, 1 nay.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 251, Hess, has passed the House. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to roll call vote on final passage of Senate Hess Committee substitute for Senate Bill 251 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Clarkson, would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at-ease, we had just approved the effective date. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, there's an amendment to the letter of intent. I think for it to be before us, I'm going to offer the motion to adopt the letter of intent and then yield for the purpose of the amendment. Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Hess Committee letter of intent for Senate Bill 251, which appears on page 3161 of the House Journal, be approved.
Again. Hearing objection.
Point of order. I think you're talking about the House S. Because there were previous S. We're talking about the House S letter of intent.
One on page 3161 of the House Journal.
Okay, we're talking about the letter of intent by the reference that the majority leader gave in the journal. I hear objections. We have an amendment before us. Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment to the letter of intent.
Object.
Are there any? Would the clerk please make reference to that amendment first?
Amendment number 1 to the letter of intent. Page 2 through 3, and it is on each member's desk.
Okay, the amendment has been moved. Representative Maru, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The amendment to the letter of intent would maintain or retain the first 6 numbered paragraphs that you see before you, which describe generally how a doctoral program shall be configured in psychology within Alaska. The first numbered, paragraph number 7, there are 2. The first numbered one would be deleted and all remaining sections would be deleted. There are a number of reasons for this, not the least of which is the fact that the letter of intent literally starts after starting with section number 7, literally starts establishing a curriculum for psychology. If you look at it with me, it has methodology and history. That's A. B is foundation in psychology, which is divided into 4 sections: biological bases of behavior, cognitive affective bases of behavior, social bases of behavior, individual differences. Then we have C. Additional preparation, including 1. Knowledge and use of ethics, etc. Supervised practicum and our laboratory experiences, advanced preparation appropriate to the area of specialization, and so forth. Section 8 is programs accredited. Then we have 7 sections on a program of graduate study for a master's degree. It is not the business of this legislature to establish a curriculum for psychology or any other field. That is up to the university. They should be establishing the curricula, not this legislature. Plus the fact that why do we even have this in here? Providing guidelines for the basis of a doctoral program in psychology might make some sense, and therefore I have not proposed to delete the first 6 paragraphs. But getting into the detailed, and I mean detailed, curriculum is just plain silly. I mean, the people who wrote this, I don't know whether they think they're God or what, but to be able to be an expert in all fields is something that I gave up last week. Having tried it for years, I don't think it can be done. During the Renaissance, they could and did become expert in all fields, but nowadays there's just too much to learn within one lifetime, and you can't do it. So it's silly for us to try to pass or establish curricula for any kind of doctoral programs. Therefore, I ask for my colleagues' support, and unanimous support, I might add, for this psychologically intelligent amendment.
Representative Szymanski.
Well, let me assure the representative from Homer, it's not going to be unanimous. I think I'm going to trust the letter of intent. I think it outlines well the intent behind the bill itself. I think that it clarifies, at least from my perspective, an area that I've had some difficulty in understanding. I may not as learned as the representative from Homer, but I can certainly read this in black and white, and it makes sense to me, and it makes sense to retain it.
Representative Martin, were you seeking the floor?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The amendment, I think, isn't worthy because I think we should kill the whole intent. I've never seen a letter of intent so long and so detailed. The speaker from Homer addressed some of the problems in this legislation, which really supersedes the responsibilities that we have allocated through the administration to post-secondary curriculum, to the Department of Commerce and Economics. I just think it's Now, any of us can take a page out of a curricula from University of Washington, from California, from many other state universities, and superimpose it into a letter of intent. That's not the importance of a letter of intent. We're not supposed to do such things as this here. You're supposed to have faith in other organizations that are established. If we had to set up the programs and the regulations for every academic interest in this state, we'd be here all year, and then we'd have to call in all the experts. I guess it was just one person that got some curricula out of some university and said, this is the curricula we want to follow. It may be outdated. I don't know where he got it from or how many years ago this thing was established. I think the letter of intent in this case is really going way beyond the responsibility of legislation and should be defeated.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, although I don't do it often, I'm going to support this amendment. I am a little bit troubled by a letter of intent that runs on to three pages. I'm familiar with the opinion of our courts with regard to letters of intent and the, frankly, shaky legal ground that they're on. They are, in fact, considered by the court, yet are not considered quite binding by the court. Since they have sort of a vague legal status, and since the effect of such a detailed letter of intent may well be to confuse the law rather than to clarify it, I'm led to conclude that letters of intent of this kind of detail are not good public policy, and I'm therefore going to support the amendment.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's important before people say that they are concerned about the length of this letter of intent to listen and understand the reason for this unique letter of intent. I'm not aware of any letter of intent that we've had, at least in the short time I've been here, that has been so detailed. But there's a specific and a vital reason for that letter of intent in this particular case. And I think that that Mr. Speaker, you and the other members may understand the particular reason for that if I go into the history of this bill a little bit. This is an unusual board, the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Associate Examiners. It has a history of being a runaway board. It was used to shut down the practice of psychology for a number of years. And as a result of that, and this occurred in the mid-1970s, there was a general outcry that people could not get licensed. Psychological associates couldn't get licensed. Psychologists couldn't get licensed. And as a result of that, there have been several amendments to the statutes over the years. The first amendment in the mid-1970s was to add two public members to that particular board. And I happened to have been involved at that point because at the time I was on the governor's mental health advisory council. And we heard a plethora of complaints from people around the state who had such things as their letters came in, their applications. And they were stamped in, but they did not get notification of the examination. And there were serious problems with that board. And as a result, the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, the Legislative Audit, made specific recommendations in its last audit, which was dated August 12, 1981. And one of these particular provisions in that report is the subject of this letter of intent. And I'm quoting from page 14 of that report. Legislation should be introduced to change licensing statutes for psychological associates to encourage more qualified applicants to apply and become licensed in the state. And the figures were appalling, Mr. Speaker. For the past 3 years, there had not been a single applicant. I'm sorry, there have been three applicants approved as psychological associates. That's all. And in the total, in the entire, the total number of psychological associates who were licensed in the state at that time were only three. And now there are only 13 psychological associates who have been licensed. Specifically, the purpose of the legislation is to modernize and allow these people who, as the chairman of the Transportation Committee said, are people who have a lot of experience, a master's level, to be able to be licensed and not be shut down by the board. And what we have, and I refer you to the bill itself. Originally, there was discretion granted to the board to license these people and to establish regulations. What this bill does is take that discretion from the board. Requires them, number one, on page one, line 11, to establish objective requirements. Not subjective, but objective, so that people know what the standards are, so that they can appeal if they're denied, so it's fair for everyone. Secondly, on page four, it has very specific requirements that must be met. And I urge you to look at page four, lines 24 through 26. The board shall grant the petition of the applicant for a psychological associate license if the associate satisfies the criteria established by the board by regulation. In other words, if you establish these objective criteria, you gotta be licensed. And then in the final sentence, section 8, the regulations, and I'm on page 5 of the bill now, section 8, the board shall submit proposed permanent regulations establishing the criteria for practice without supervision, etc., to the legislature, and the requirements for the graduate program, to this legislature not later than the 10th day of the first session of the 15th state legislature. So that's the third prong. to rein in this board. They have got to submit a report within 10 days of the first session as to how they're implementing. And what we've done is we've done everything short of putting this into statute. And that board is due to be sunsetted next year, and I would hope and trust, if they don't follow this director, that that board will be sunsetted, or this will be put directly into statute. And that's why this is so detailed in the letter of intent. It's one last chance for the board to establish objective criteria and license these people and stop goofing around. And I urge the letter of intent.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, if it's that important, it could have been put in the bill.
Representative Kopanen, you were seeking the floor.
Yes, thank you. On the letter of intent, I'd like to point out that this is one instance in which the other body did a considerable amount of research. And following the legislative budget and audit request in 1980-81, there have been a number of attempts to change the program, and the board did loosen up a little bit, but they have issued since that date 36 licensees, of whom 32 are licensed psychologists, 4 are licensed psychological associates, and of the 32 licensed psychologists, 6 only are from American Psychological Association accredited schools. Now, unlike the situation in the medical profession, where you have fairly restrictive practice rules, but where you have a number of programs, a broad number of programs throughout the country that offer medical training, the American Psychological Association has not extended accreditation to the majority of colleges and universities, including my alma mater, including Harvard University, as an approved program. And in fact, some of the leading research and training colleges in psychology are not approved by APA. The current status and the current practice of the board has been to restrict recognition only to colleges approved by APA, even though there are a greater number of colleges and universities offering training and recognized training that are not recognized. In other words, we have the functioning of a guild rule that attempts to restrict entrance into the profession even more than some of the other professions that we often accuse of this practice. And this is not to say that the training offered by APA schools is in any way inferior. Nevertheless, for example, in Florida, the board was thrown out because of this, due to a suit. We wish to enlarge the opportunities for people entering psychological profession in Alaska and practicing in Alaska. In fact, one of my constituents, Ken Green, who is an APA member and was trained at APA school, and is a professor at the university, stated that Alaska has too many mental health problems to restrict unduly the practice of psychology. The present regulations are restrictive and elitist and serve to penalize the consumer by making therapy and counseling too expensive. What we want to do is to broaden the field, but not broaden it so that anybody who has read Psychology Today can put up a shingle saying that they're a psychologist. And for that reason, this letter of intent, which is essentially an edited version of the Senate letter of intent, has to go along. Otherwise, the problem will continue. Thank you.
Representative Ewling, you've been seeking the floor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think that, first of all, we're doing a lot of work, committee work on the floor here, particularly on this letter of intent, and I think that what we should do is vote for the amendment to delete this language and, again, vote on the main amendment and delete the whole letter of intent, because I think this work should have been done primarily in the committee, and I think we're wasting a lot of time on a lot of bureaucratic rigmarole that could have been handled in the committee, and it's just absolutely ridiculous.
Representative Rieger, were you seeking the floor?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to point out that we're spending a lot of time on a letter of intent for what is the hard way to become licensed. There's an easy way and a hard way. And I would point out to the members that this bill also allows you to merely be licensed in another state. And be a member of the American Board of Professional Psychology, and you're automatically entitled to a license. And I fail to see the merit in debating forever this letter of intent.
Representative Gruenberg.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, lest you think we're doing committee work here on the floor, I want to assure you that this bill, I'm sorry, the letter of intent, with just a couple of minor changes, a couple of word changes, was passed by the Senate Hess Committee. It's the Senate Hess Committee's letter of intent, essentially. It was passed by the full Senate. It's been passed by the House Labor and Commerce Committee, and a couple of words were added in the House Hess Committee. So this is not doing committee work. This is something that's specifically designed to accompany the bill, because once again, the regulations are to be adopted by the board. We are not doing it. We are telling them this is our intent. And then if they don't do it, and the sunset, we'll put it into law or we'll terminate the board. It's to give the board specific directions.
Are you ready for the question on the amendment to the letter of intent, Representative Martin?
Mr. Speaker, if I may, the two prime sponsors gave us excellent reasons why the board should be sunsetted today. I don't think this letter of intent is going to help any. If they did come back and follow section number 5, we would only argue it for another 2 years that they did not follow the exact guideline that these two individuals who are not telling us from wherewith they got all the wisdom to put in what programs. I think this should be killed. Perhaps we should rescind our action on the bill and sunset it.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 1 to the letter of intent be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. That's what the chair said. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the
vote? Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hurley.
From yea to nay.
From yea to nay. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
20 yeas, 16 nays.
The amendment number 1 has been adopted to the letter of intent. Now we have the letter of intent before us. Is there any further amendments to this letter of intent? Representative Szymanski.
Will you have brief at ease, please?
The House, please stand at ease. Will the House come back to order? Before the at-ease, we have a motion before us to adopt the letter of intent. Is there any further debate on the letter of intent? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the letter of intent be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
22 yeas, 7 nays.
The letter of intent has been adopted.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Larson.
Yes, may we revert back up to the calendar to introduction of guests?
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
And Delrier, Mr. Speaker, is a constituent of Representative Hurley and myself. I'm Dr. Kurt Menard.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Davis.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Delrier, I have a good friend and a constituent that's now living in the Anchorage area, although temporarily, Jim Sampson.
Any further guests for introduction? Having no further guests for introduction, would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Senate Bill number 370 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to aid to families with dependent children and to child support and enforcement and providing for an effective date. The Hess Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 370 Hess with the same title and reports it back as follows. The report was signed by the co-chairs Gruenberg and Kopanen, signing do pass, Gruenberg, Hurley, and Kopanen. Signing do not pass unless reciprocal provisions are inserted, Taylor. Having no recommendation, Pettijohn, Thompson, and Hanley. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 370 Judiciary with the same title and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, signing do pass, M.M. Miller, Gruenberg, Pettijohn, and Phillips. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Judiciary Committee substitute for Senate Bill 370 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the committee substitute Judiciary? Hearing no objections, that committee substitute has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Judiciary Committee substitute for Senate Bill 370 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Do we have objections to the advancement motion from second to third reading? Hearing no objections, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 370, Judiciary by the Judiciary Committee, enact relating to aid to families with dependent children and to child support and enforcement and providing for an effective date.
Third reading, under debate. Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm very supportive of this agency in the last 2 years because I think they've done an excellent job in upgrading the responsibilities of fathers who do not necessarily take care of their children. So I'm very pleased with the work they're doing. My only question, sir, is on page 3, line 13. I wonder if someone could explain what kind of options an individual has that may be granted upon a call shown of withholding the responsibilities. Payment of arrears alone does not constitute good cause, but what does constitute good cause? If I may yield to someone, sir.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Speaker. This language is required by federal law. There's a federal regulation that says that payment of arrears alone does not constitute good cause. Good cause could be several things. For example, it could be a serious and permanent disability on the part of the payor. Somebody's permanently disabled. It could be a change of custody of the child. It could be an emancipation of the child. Child gets married or joins the armed services.
Any further debate? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to vote against this bill, and I want to take the opportunity to explain briefly why. I've been a strong supporter of the Child Support Enforcement Agency. In fact, Mr. Speaker, I participated in the drafting of the original statute that created the Child Support Enforcement Agency and have been a strong supporter of their funding and the work they're doing. However, this bill just simply goes too far. What this bill does in at least two different ways, Mr. Speaker, is to expand the powers of the Child Support Enforcement Agency to the collection of alimony. Not child support, but alimony. Support that goes to a person other than the child. If you'll look, that appears throughout the bill, Mr. Speaker. Any place where you see the elimination of the word child, for example, on page 2, line 5, the reason is that the Child Support Enforcement Agency is converting its efforts into the collection of non-child support, spousal support, alimony, whatever you want to call it. Now, Mr. Speaker, the response to that can be, of course, that we're required to do that by federal law. Most of what we have done in the area of child support in the last couple of years has been required by federal law. Well, Mr. Speaker, at some point, I say nuts to the federal law. I think that's bad policy, and I don't think that we should divert the efforts of the Child Support Enforcement Agency to the collection of alimony. In addition, Mr. Speaker, if you look at Section 6 of the legislation on page 3, there is a section that we were told was not required by federal law. What that section does is essentially if a person is receiving aid to families with dependent children for herself and her child, right now what the interpretation is that the portion of that monthly payment that goes to the child shall be determined to be the child support payment level. What this legislation does is expand that and say that all of the money that goes to the parent and to the child will be considered the payment level. Now, let me give you an example of the impact of what the change in Section 6 is. According to testimony before the Judiciary Committee, there is in the aid to families with dependent children, there's a very complicated little chart that decides how much money each person is going to get. And then what they have in an adult not included family, which means that the adult is not needy. Let's say it's a grandparent or an uncle or something like that who is not needy, but the child is. The child receives $251 a month from the state. That would, under the existing law, be the payment level for that child. But what about the situation, Mr. Speaker, where both the mother and the child are indigent and are qualified for AFDC? The payment level in that case, according to the testimony, is $638 a month. Mr. Speaker, the change in Section 6 would be that if you're fixing the child support amount on the father, the child support amount that will have to be paid by that person each month will be $638. That is the amount calculated by the department not only to support the child, $251 a month, but the amount to support the spouse. Mr. Speaker, that's requiring the department to collect alimony and spousal support. I don't think that's a proper function of the department, and I'm going to vote against the bill.
Representative Gruenberg?
I'll defer.
Representative Maru?
Mr. Speaker, I was wavering on this bill, but following the ringing statement by our esteemed majority leader, I believe I will vote against it. He's made a lot of sense, and he has my vote on this issue. Thank you.
Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gruenberg.
I want to respond to the 2 points made by the majority leader, and there are only 2 points that he made. First of all, with respect to the bill as a whole, what the bill does is cure a number of technical problems that were left over when we passed House Bill 92 last session in 1985. House Bill 92, as you will recall, was the major child support bill. And as the majority leader has correctly stated, that particular bill was mandated in large part by federal law, including the provision, the first provision that he mentioned. And what we're doing, because that was a large bill, once in a while in these bills that move through fairly quickly, and don't forget, we had to pass that by last October, or we would be in violation of federal law and would be liable to lose substantial federal sums that come with that federal law. There were some conforming amendments that weren't made. And the first thing that the majority leader mentioned, which are the conforming amendments that delete the word child throughout, those conforming amendments conform, number one, to federal law, but number two, to House Bill 92 that we passed last year. And I'm quoting from Section 4 of House Bill, I'm sorry, I'm quoting from Section 7 of House Bill 92, that gives jurisdiction to the Child Support Enforcement Agency to enforce a spousal support order if the spousal support obligation has been established, and if a support obligation has been established with respect to the child of that spouse and is also being administered. This is required under federal law. We're talking about the spousal support obligations that are in the same case. We're not opening a new case, and this is simply consistent with what we did last year. If you don't pass this bill, you'll have a real glitch in the law because you already have a requirement that the Child Support Enforcement Division administer that, but you don't have the means of making some of these statutes match up with the earlier statute. That's number one. Number two, with respect to the comment about Section 6 here and the relative with whom the child is living, the testimony showed that if the child is living with somebody who is not otherwise eligible for AFDC, the table in column one, which is child alone, is used. The only time this language comes into play is if the adult is independently eligible. And what we're talking about is a couple of $100 extra a month to help make up for the additional expenses. We're dealing with people who are below the poverty level. We're dealing with a cost that's far less than putting the kid into foster care. And as a practical matter, Mr. Speaker, the practical choice is these people, if they are not given this subsidy, the children will wind up in foster care. And it's much better to have the child with an adult, a family member, than in foster care. And I urge passage of the bill.
Any further debate? Representative Clarkson.
One final point, Mr. Speaker. On Section 6, let everyone understand that when the amount of obligation, again, let's use the father, when the obligation of the father goes up to $638 per month, the kid isn't going to get any of that. It goes to the state to reimburse for the AFDC payment. So Section 6 doesn't do a thing for the kid.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 370, Judiciary, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Larson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, from yea to nay.
From yea to nay. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
15 yeas, 23 nays.
House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 370, Judiciary, has failed to pass the House. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give notice of reconsideration of my vote on Senate Bill 370.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. Before I call a brief at ease, would the minority leader and the majority leader come forward? Would the House stand at ease? Right. Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, the House had just disposed of Senate Bill 370. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 377 amended be moved to the bottom of today's calendar.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, that bill will appear at the bottom of the House calendar. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Senate Joint Resolution Number 45 by the Labor and Commerce Committee relating to compensation for injuries to commercial fishermen. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the resolution and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Navarre Chairman, concurring Navarre, Copen, and Hanley, Pierce, Boucher, and Davis. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that SJR 45 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement motion? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read that resolution for the third time?
Senate Joint Resolution Number 45 by the Labor and Commerce Committee relating to compensation for injuries to commercial fishermen.
The resolution is before us in third reading and under debate. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall Senate Joint Resolution 45 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
37 yeas, no nays.
Senate Joint Resolution 45 has passed the House. We have some final action on some citations. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that all of the citations appearing on today's calendar be approved.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the citations on today's calendar? Hearing no objections, the citations have been adopted. This brings us to the bottom of the calendar. Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd bring up my reconsideration of my vote on committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 71.
Would the clerk please read the title to that resolution?
Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 71, Finance by the Finance Committee, proposing amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska creating the Alaska Research Development Endowment.
The joint resolution is before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to call the House and ask for a brief at ease.
Okay, the House has been called. The Body, please stand at ease. Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had a motion to bring up a reconsideration of the Joint Resolution 71. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, there's been a request from the minority for a caucus, I think it's probably, since it's near lunchtime now, it's appropriate to recess for the purpose of that caucus now. I will place that motion in a moment, and when we come back at 1:15, the first item to be addressed will be the item that's pending before us right now. And before I place the motion to recess, I'll pause for announcements.
Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, I was just wondering, are we going to remain under a call during that recess?
I lift the call.
Okay, the call has been lifted. Thank you, Representative Duncan, for reminding us. Representative Martin.
Speaker, thank you, and thank the Majority Leader for his courtesy. I'd like to announce that there will be a minority caucus immediately following recess, and I'd like to ask also if the Majority Leaders will allow the minority people in the chair line first so we can take a lunch over with us. Thank you.
Representative Adams. Oh.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Finance won't meet till tomorrow morning at 8:30. We'll be taking up the reappropriation bill. That bill is House Bill number 574, and also the capital budget, Senate Bill 171.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Labor and Commerce will attempt to meet at the end of whenever we finish up our floor business today, and if not, we'll meet in the morning.
Representative Miller.
The House Judiciary will not meet at 1:15. I'm not sure when we'll take up the bills that were calendared for that, but I'll try to check my staff and get a decision on that as soon as possible.
Representative Ringsted.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Trade Committee meeting is going to have a quick meeting tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in House Finance. It has to be quick so we can get out for the Finance Committee. But Mr. S.K. Lee is supposed to be coming into town today. He is our honorary representative in our office in Korea, as well as a member of the leader of the Korean Trading Association, and he will be here to just give us a few words and give us a chance to say hello and meet with him. So the committee is asked to be there promptly, and anybody else that would like to come is more than welcome.
Any further committee announcements? Representative Larson.
Yes, the Finance Subcommittee on the Education Funding Bill will try to meet sometime today, and as soon as we find some appropriate time, I'll try to let all committee members know. And anyone else who would like to be there should let me know.
Representative Hurley.
Mr. Speaker, State Affairs will meet at 3 if we finish. Otherwise, we'll meet as soon as we finish our work on the floor.
Any further committee announcements? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House stand in recess till 1:15.
1:15. Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 71, Finance, before us under reconsideration. Representative Adams?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I call the House on this bill.
The House has been called. Do we have any further debate under reconsideration?
Can we have an at ease a minute?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, there was a call placed upon the House. Do we have any debate in relation with the resolution before us? Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. While we're waiting for the call to be satisfied, and I understand that one of the members of the House is over testifying before a committee in the other body, and I wouldn't want to have us all wait for him. I wanted to speak a little on dedicated funds and hopefully explain to people why I think that the members should oppose the constitutional amendment, regardless of what they feel about organized research or any kind of research generally. And my reasons for opposing this amendment are that the concept of dedicated funds has been repeatedly rejected by this body, not necessarily the 14th Alaska State Legislature, but various state legislatures since statehood, and in fact prior to statehood, the constitutional framers also rejected the concept of dedicated funds. Now, through the years, we've seen quite a few of these. There has been a move to dedicate funds to education. Just recently, within the last 2 years, we've heard a lot of talk. It hasn't been on the floor, but back home, I've certainly had a lot of people talk to me about a dedicated fund for capital projects. The municipalities want a dedicated fund. And I think that the reason is that it's any group would be in a better position for secure funding if they would not have to compete with other needs. However, I think that whenever we have dedicated a fund, and there are some that were grandfathered in or they're dedicated in some other way, it has not led to the best public policy. And one of the examples we have of this is the International Airport Revenue Fund. Just 2 days ago, we had a member in this House complaining about the Alaska Room, a VIP room that almost none of us have even seen at the Anchorage International Airport, which flies through the legislature. Dedicated fund, it's not part of the general fund. We don't give the scrutiny to those requests that we do to other things. And the first thing we know, lo and behold, we have something that I doubt we would have ever appropriated for had it been competing with every other need in the capital budget. We've had a problem with the Alaska Power Authority living off of CIP receipts. That's not quite a dedicated fund, but it is a non-lapsing capital appropriation which can be drawn on for operating purposes in practice, and we have an agency which many have expressed dissatisfaction with. Again, when it comes before the legislature for appropriation, as soon as people look and it says program receipts, generally the debate ends. I don't think that the scrutiny is the same when there's a dedicated fund. Now, there have been dedicated funds in other states. There was a book written about what happened with a fund in the Transit Authority in New York and New Jersey. Again, I don't think it was the optimum public policy. Now, what we would be doing with this resolution is rejecting the logic of the framers of the Constitution. And on top of that, the way I see it, it'd be a slap in the face to all the other worthy causes who have come to this legislature or prior legislators for their own dedicated fund. We're telling the education, capital projects, whoever else, that they can't have theirs, but when on this one, for research, they can. And we're not only making a statement that we are in favor of research, but we are giving an absolute priority to this one purpose. Research is not a preference, it's an absolute priority. Now, Mr. Speaker, when we have looked at the budget for the University of Alaska as an example, and I use that as an example because it's fairly close to what's being proposed here, many of us try to not pay close attention. We pay close attention, but try not to legislatively tinker with what is being recommended by the Board of Regents. We have a concept, a sense of the separation of politics and government from education, and tend to go with their recommendations. It certainly has been that case for the 2 years that I've served on the subcommittee for the university. However, we do have at least one remaining legislative control. And when I say we, it's not just the legislature, it's the people of Alaska. The people have the ultimate source of power through the legislature. If they don't like what's being done, they don't have to fund it. And even though we don't interfere with the day-to-day workings of the university, we do have the control that if they come up with something which is off the wall, it hasn't been off the wall, but if they did, we wouldn't have to fund it. We are cutting off that power of the purse that we as a legislature have and which the people have acting through us to cut off one function of government, which is to fund research. And in practicality, this is not a small matter, it's a large matter. We're establishing a $1 billion endowment. It'll take a while to get there, but it grows until it's $1 billion. Now, at an estimated 10% interest rate, which may or may not be true, but around 10%, That is a $100 million per year dedicated fund. I can't contemplate us, when we have just been given direction in the House Finance Committee to cut a $300 million capital budget to $150 million, and statewide we are going to scrimp and scrape and try to come up with meeting all these statewide needs with $150 million, I can't contemplate that existing side by side with our contemplating, sometime in the future, a $100 million fund for just the purpose of research. Now, I like research, and I am not trying to say that we should do away with research, but I think that it should have to compete with all the other priorities on a year-by-year basis. I think that it would lead to better policy, lead to better prioritization of what are the most pressing needs of the state, and it's in that vein that I think that we are making a mistake by establishing a dedicated fund. I've outlined three reasons, and I think any of them are valid reasons. We are cutting off the power of the people, the one control they have over how the state exercises their money, which is to cut off the funds. We establish a dedicated fund, which rejects the logic of the framer of the constitutions, and we have examples of the lower degree of scrutiny which has occurred whenever we have had a program receipt or a dedicated fund going through our budget process. Now, I think that the reasons for opposing it should not include an opposition to research. I think we should continue to support research. I think that a lot of us have raised questions about what happened with AEIDC or with any of the other decisions regarding research. I think those are proper elements for public debate and should be in here in the push and pull with all other capital work that we're doing, and for that matter, operating budget work. I also think that this should not in any way be a regional issue. I think every area of the state needs research. This is not pro or anti the university, pro or anti the Southeast or Fairbanks or Anchorage or the Bush. I just think that the proper way to address the question of research is to have it compete with the other needs of the state. And it's that vein that I urge the members to put on their statesman hat on this one and think of the Constitution and think about what we're doing with the Constitution when we vote on this amendment.
Representative Pinyalbury.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have my appropriate hat on, and I'd like to indicate to the body four fallacies that I've just detected in the previous speaker's remarks. First of all, the Alaska room at Anchorage International Airport, some mention has been made that there's been $250,000 of some kind of exotic improvements there. But in checking into that, Mr. Speaker, I'm told those are leasehold improvements. Leasehold improvements are paid for by the person who holds the lease. Those are not monies expended through the revenue fund that were budgeted through the budget at any time. Those are private funds that the leaseholder spends. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, the concept of a dedicated fund, saying that to pass any kind of a dedicated fund would be a slap in the face to the framers of the Constitution. Well, certainly no one here wants to do that. But if that argument follows, then we'd have to say that every single amendment that's been passed to the U.S. Constitution, to the Alaska Constitution, has been a slap in the face to someone. And, Mr. Speaker, the fact of the matter is that times change. Our system allows for adaptation of current technology and the development of our society so that we can improve the Constitution. And that's what that's all this constitutional amendment attempts to do. Fourthly, Mr. Speaker, to call this program embodied in this resolution and in the companion bill just research, it's really much more than that. To read the most of the members, I hope, have looked through the report called A Challenge to Alaska that was put together by the University of Alaska Foundation. It gives you a feeling and it gives you an excitement for how we might enter the next century a step ahead of the game, so to speak. And to call that program just research is like calling Brooke Shields just a hunk of protoplasm. Mr. Speaker, I want to make the point that we're not freezing out education. We're not slapping any other important interest in the state in the face, because as you look through here and you see what the sweep of this program is, it includes education, it includes the arts, it includes engineering, it includes transportation, it includes virtually all the sciences. And what we have to do is find out which sciences should we apply Alaska's resources to in the next century so that we can make the best use of the operating and capital budgets that will be spent in the future.
Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, I speak against this resolution for any number of reasons, only one of which I'll talk about now, and that's money. This would set aside $1 billion. As my colleague from the Kenai Peninsula said the other day, that's one followed by nine zeros. It's 1,000 times 1,000 times 1,000. Try to put it in perspective for you. If we put that out in a permanent fund dividend check, how big would it be? Well, you've recently may have received a check for $400 or $500. Well, $1 billion would be a permanent fund dividend check of $2,500. That's how much $1 billion is. Or if you divided it up to every single living person in the entire 50 states of the United States of America, every single person would get $4. That's a lot of money. Put it another way, we could probably well visualize $1,000. If you had $1,000 in $10 bills, that would be 100 bills, right? If you put those on a table and squashed it down, how thick would it be? They might be a half an inch thick. Okay, that's $1,000 in $10 bills. How much is $1 million? Well, it's 1,000 times that. It's a stack of bills squashed down flat 42 feet high. That's four stories. That's almost as tall as a Capitol building. That's $1 million. Now, what is $1 billion? $1 billion is 1,000 times that. If you stacked it up, the stack would be, now this is squashed down flat, folks, as flat as you can get it. The stack would be 8 miles high of $10 bills. 8 miles high. That's from here to the airport. A stack, not laid end to end, a stack of bills from here to the airport, $10 bills. If you laid them end to end, how far would it go? Well, I know you're waiting for the answer, and the answer is that it would go 9,470 miles laid end to end, $10 bills. That's from here to Vietnam once. Or, if you want to come back, it's a round trip from here to Moscow. That is a lot of money, folks. That's $1 billion. This whole thing is ridiculous, and everybody ought to vote against it.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I support the movement to rescind our action. Over the years, whenever we had a constitutional amendment, there's been a groundswell by the people, and we as legislators responded to their concerns, such as election of Attorney General. That issue has been before us for ever since we became a state, and the legislators have not seen fit yet to bring it before the people to have an election of the Attorney General. We did have a couple elections on moving the Capitol, and that went before the people, and one time or twice it lost, and one time it won, and another time it's up in the air because we don't know how much to spend on it. But at least the question was brought to the people because there was a groundswell. Most recently, as the gentleman to my left mentioned, that the people wanted something done on appropriations. They wanted a dedication to the point of maybe no more than two-thirds for operating of the state government, and one-third in support of the necessary facilities in our society of schools, roads, and water. In this particular case, we have 4 days left in this session. Through the whole last 2 years, I have not heard one citizen, I have not received one letter or one telegram